This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, before the break, we heard about a dangerous effort to gather evidence against Bashar al-Assad and his regime for a possible war crimes trial. I wanted to find out more about the politics of that, how a war crimes trial might work. So we called Kevin John Heller. Heller was on the defense team for the criminal trial of Radovan Karadzic of the Bosnian Serbs, and he worked for Human Rights Watch during the trial of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. Heller is a professor of criminal law at the University of London. Is there any likely scenario in your mind where we're going to turn on a television and see a trial of Bashar al-Assad?
At the International Criminal Court or anywhere?
Well, anywhere, really.
Well, I mean, why don't we start with the International Criminal Court? Because that seems to be the loudest chorus of voices. I don't think we will ever see Bashar al-Assad prosecuted by the ICC. Obviously, that would require a referral from the Security Council. And, you know, Russia and China have already vetoed one attempt to do that. And there's no reason to think that they would change their mind anytime soon. Could you create a special tribunal? Same kind of problem. They're either created by the Security Council, you know, like the Yugoslav Tribunal or the Rwanda Tribunal, or they're established with the consent of a state and the United Nations, looking at like the Cambodia Tribunal. And clearly Syria, as long as Assad is in power, is never going to create that kind of institution. So really, I think all you have is the prospect of a national prosecution. But even if he isn't the head of state, it is very difficult to see where the venue or the mechanism is to give him a prosecution. Again, I don't really see a scenario in which he ever ends up in the dock. But does that mean that there aren't many, many other players in the Syrian government, many other players in ISIS, among the Syrian rebels who, you know, maybe not equally deserving of punishment, but certainly deserve punishment? And there, with the slightly lower ranking war crimes perpetrators, there I think we could see something after the conflict ends in terms of genuine accountability. So perhaps it's a question of kind of scaling back what our expectations for accountability are, and then we won't be quite as disappointed when, as is so often the case, the very, very higher-ups somehow, you know, escape the noose.
You served as Human Rights Watch's external legal advisor on the trial of Saddam Hussein in Baghdad. Their final report on the trial cited a failure to disclose key evidence, important gaps in the evidence. In short, it was a mess. Does that shape how you look at what may or may not be justice for Assad and his deputies?
It's a very complicated question. I think that the Hussein trial was really a missed opportunity. It is very easy to understand why the Iraqis wanted to try their own former dictator themselves. But anybody who kind of followed the Iraqi criminal justice system, anyone who is aware of, you know, what Saddam Hussein did to the Iraqi criminal justice system, the idea that they were going to hold a fair and credible trial, I don't think was ever particularly convincing. That said, I think it was even worse than those of us who are quite pessimistic ever expected. And it is a warning lesson because it ended up turning him really into a martyr and just further destabilizing the situation in Iraq. And that's the last thing we would want for an Assad in Syria.
Can you give me an example of justice being brought to a dictator the right way? Is it Nuremberg?
I do in many ways think that the Nuremberg trials, both the big one and the 12 American trials that I wrote my book about, really are an object lesson in how to do things correctly. But, you know, if you look at the problems that the military commissions have had at Guantanamo Bay, compare those to the trials that the Nazis had 75 years ago, and the trials of the Nazis come across looking pretty good in terms of their overall fairness. And I think it's very difficult to argue that terrorism in any form poses the kind of existential threat that the Nazis did. So if we can give the Nazis a fair trial, and many of the Nazi defendants themselves said that they received fair trials, you know, I would like to think that no matter how dangerous the suspect, that we could give them fair trials today.
Well, that leads to the question of who judges? Who gets to judge? You know, if you are as harsh on Guantanamo as many people are, as I am, if you say to yourself, the United States has more prisoners than any other country in the world by leaps and bounds, how can any country, major power, not only lecture other nations in the realm of human rights, but put other leaders in the dock?
It's an extremely fair question, and the more multilateral a response is probably the more credible it's going to be. I understand why so many people think that the proper venue for any kind of trial of Assad or any other member of his regime is the International Criminal Court, because it is certainly a troubled project, but it is a project that represents the aspirations of now more than 125 countries. So, you know, it is difficult to look at an institution like that and say, this is just neocolonialism, or this is just, you know, the West using an institution as a puppet to further its economic interests. You know, that is the advantage of that kind of venue.
In the past generation, where can you point to a success, a place where the process went reasonably smoothly and justice was done?
I think if you want to look at success stories, I mean, really probably you do look at the Rwanda Tribunal and the Yugoslav Tribunal. And I certainly don't want to imply that they were perfect tribunals. I certainly don't want to imply that they delivered, you know, perfect justice. But they were credible, effective international institutions. The Security Council created them. The Security Council gave them some teeth. They were able to arrest the suspects. They were able to conduct investigations. And, you know, by and large, they've been able to hold extremely credible trials and convict hundreds of very important criminal perpetrators of very serious international crimes. So, you know, we can have some hope that there is eventually going to be a time of reckoning. You know, a man that I represented for a couple of years, Radovan Karadzic, he managed to escape being caught for 12 years, but he was eventually caught. He was eventually prosecuted. And just a couple of weeks ago, he was eventually convicted. So it can happen. It's just we really need to temper our expectations and temper, you know, our criteria of success for international criminal justice, because that to me is the danger, expecting it to do too much too quickly and then only being disappointed in what it fails to do.
Professor Heller, how could you imagine defending Bashar al-Assad? What would a lawyer do to defend him, and on what basis? What would be the legal defense for him?
That I don't envy the attorney who ends up defending Bashar al-Assad. I do think the evidence of his responsibility for very, very serious international crimes is, you know, probably quite overwhelming.
How does the use of chemical weapons affect or not affect an international prosecution?
That's a very complicated question to answer, and the answer really depends on what institution we're talking about. There is a very long and sordid history of the prohibition of chemical weapons at the International Criminal Court. Whether you could actually charge, say, Bashar al-Assad with using a prohibited chemical weapon, the answer is really no at the International Criminal Court.
Does systematic torture change the picture at all?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a classic war crime at any international tribunal. If any member of the Assad regime that was responsible for torture ended up at the ICC, I would think that those charges would figure very, very prominently. The fact that you might not be able to charge them specifically with the use of chemical weapons certainly wouldn't handicap prosecution. You have, you know, murder as a crime against humanity. You have extermination as a crime against humanity. You have all kinds of war crimes of deliberately attacking civilians and humanitarian assistance organizations. There would be plenty in an indictment of any senior member of the Assad regime.
Would you defend him?
Oh, I would absolutely defend him. I would defend him in a heartbeat.
And you would do it on what basis?
I would do it on the basis that just at the domestic level, every defendant deserves a zealous defense, and that international criminal law is predicated on the need for an effective defense counsel representing his client to the best of his ability. You know, it's very common that it's not a simple black and white guilt or innocence situation, but it's a situation in which a defendant is guilty of some things and not guilty of others. And your job as a defense attorney is really, you know, almost a technocratic one, where your role is to ensure that they're convicted of what they actually did and not convicted of what the prosecution says that they did.
Professor Heller, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kevin John Heller is an academic and criminal lawyer, and he's the author of a book about the Nuremberg tribunals.